You've probably heard the term trauma-informed care a lot more of late. Trauma-informed care, or TIC, is about being aware that people have some tough situations behind them, and that taking those situations, those traumas, into account will change the way people are dealt with, which could mean a big change in the way that many public services are delivered, including how we deal with kids in school. But it's bigger than that. Two guests help us understand trauma-informed care and ACEs, adverse childhood experiences. Peter Buckley is a former state representative and now with Southern Oregon Success based in Medford. He's in the studio with me. Peter, good to see you once again.
It's great to be here.
And Dr. Todd Bloomquist is using trauma-informed care in a program at the Grants Pass School District where he's the director of school improvement. He joins us by phone. Dr. Bloomquist, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Jeffrey.
Peter, let's start with you because you're the person people knew for years as a state legislator from the Ashland area. What is Southern Oregon Success and what's it set up to do?
Well, Southern Oregon Success is a collaboration of collaborations, all levels of education from the Early Learning Hub through all the K-12 districts in Jackson, Josephine County, RCC, Southern Oregon University, the coordinated care organizations with the Oregon Health Plan, mental health providers, public safety organizations like Jackson County Juvenile Justice, Rogue Workforce Partnership. So everything that touches a child or a family in Southern Oregon is a focus of Southern Oregon Success. And that's one reason that we're looking at the trauma-informed work. And the work around trauma-informed is based on the ACEs study, the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study. So using that science behind that study and the science behind neurobiology, how our brain develops, epigenetics, how we pass down traits one generation to another, and resilience. Resilience is really what our focus is. How do you meet people where they are, understand that they are who they are, partly by what they experience, and work with them so they can succeed.
So in other words, be aware that they have their differences right up front. I mean, you can't not dealing with people just like number 35, serving 35.
Right. Exactly. Meet everybody where it is. And, you know, Todd's done such great work with Grants Pass School District, and that really is their philosophy, to try to meet every student where that student is and help make sure that student can succeed.
So, Todd, give us a sense of the term more or less speaks for itself, adverse childhood experiences, but what kinds of experiences are we talking about here?
Well, you know, we're talking about a variety of experiences, and I think that's sort of the human condition to have stressors in life. And some people, in fact, quite a few more than we thought in the past, and I kind of use the number 3 out of 5 kids coming to our classrooms are coming from some kind of adverse situation, so they've adapted to that. And so it could be from, you know, very serious things, you know, forms of abuse, those kinds of things in a household. It could be the loss of loved ones. Our children that are in the foster care service have a number of adversities that they are wrestling with. And so the practices that we're working on now with our staff is to have a deeper understanding of what that looks like, how people adapt to that in their lives, and what that looks like in our classrooms, and how we can better help them.
So you're assuming then that a majority of the kids who show up in class have some sort of trauma, some sort of issue they've had to deal with?
That's a correct statement. I mean, based on the data from the ACEs study, the Adverse Childhood Experiences study, that it's most people come to our classrooms with some kind of adversity that's impacted them. And of course, there's so many things that can be in the way of that in a good way. And Peter talked about resiliency, and so we spend a lot of time focusing on what are the ways that we can help children become resilient. But even in the situation where a child might have gone through some very traumatic things, having, you know, a competent, caring adult in their life can go a long ways to preventing some of the impacts of adversity. So those are really important parts.
So Todd, what kinds of precautions are taken to ensure that you neither over-define nor minimize trauma?
Right. I think probably just on a whole staff level is understanding that if children, or actually any person for that matter, but children in particular, if they could act well, they would act well. And if they're not, then something happened. And so rather than a teacher assuming that a child isn't doing what I want her to do or him to do in this moment, may not be because the child's willfully defying me, that it actually may be something else. And we talk a lot about the brain science and what happens when a student is triggered, and it could be anything. I mean, it could be the way a door slams, or somebody says something a certain way, it reminds a child of a situation, and it sends their body, you know, into kind of an adrenaline and cortisol rush, which effectively shuts down that thinking part of the brain. And so when we understand that kids may not be in their thinking part of their brain, they're in their reactive part of their brain, we need to work with them differently and give them different options and help them come back to a self-regulation again and teach them how to do that. So that's probably one of the biggest things we do is don't assume anything, actually, and just try to meet the child where they are.
We're talking about trauma-informed care and taking awareness of adverse childhood experiences. That's the ACEs study you keep hearing about with Dr. Todd Bloomquist, who's the director of school improvement at the Grants Pass School District. Peter Buckley is with Southern Oregon Success, based in Medford, also working to send trauma-informed care in a number of different levels of service providers around the Rogue Valley. You can join the conversation on the Exchange, too, at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So we have a beginning of understanding, Peter Buckley, of how to institute this at a classroom level. What other kinds of services are you looking at potentially providing? It seems like a pretty broad focus from when the last time we talked.
Absolutely. It's totally across the board. Southern Oregon Pediatrics, for instance, they're using this information by acknowledging the fact that a mom bringing a baby in for a checkup, for her first checkup with her baby, just by asking the mom the question, how was it for you when you were growing up? That's a trauma-informed question to ask, because previously they hadn't been asking that of young mothers. If a young mother can say, it was really hard for me, you know, I was abused or whatever happened to her, then they can enter into the discussion of what can we do to make sure that doesn't happen to your baby. So it goes from really from preconception all the way through how we handle each other in all social situations, how we work with each other, with our senior citizens. It goes all the way through, Jeff.
I wonder how much training goes into that particular transaction you talked about. That is not an easy subject to broach, I would think,
that
for people
isn't,
where you're saying, so you were abused as a kid. How are we going to stop you from abusing your own kid? It needs to be said better than that.
It does, and I give Southern Oregon Pediatrics a lot of credit because they really take this seriously, and they do trainings on a consistent basis. And that was an idea that came from their staff. So what we're finding in doing, we do these training sessions all over the region, and we'll get the information out to a group. Like Goodwill Industries had us for a day, and we did a training session with them. We've been with the Department of Human Services, with the caseworkers and self-sufficiency and child welfare, and we'll present the information. We'll say, this is what's happening. This is how people that you're dealing with, how they've adapted to trauma. So this is what's happening in their lives now. Given that information, what do you think you should do about it? And we've had things happen everywhere from, like I mentioned, the Southern Pediatrics question. Jackson County Juvenile Justice is changing the way they do intake on kids that come into juvenile hall because they don't want to traumatize kids, even though these kids have acted out. They've acted out because they've been traumatized. So we're trying to lessen the level of stress and trauma. So we ask different groups, what do you think should happen with this work? Phoenix Talent School District is another school district. In fact, all the school districts in our region have been introduced and have some trauma-informed practices beginning. But Phoenix Talent has their faculty and staff meet on a monthly basis. I think it's the first Monday of every month. And they basically go through information and they go through their policies and say, okay, given this information, does this policy work? They haven't expelled a student in Phoenix Talent for over 3 years. They don't expel students anymore. They try to meet students where they are and work with them.
They've also gone into things like restorative justice. Did that come out of their trauma-informed approach?
Restorative justice is a great complement. It is a trauma-informed approach because restorative justice basically says that all of us are part, all of us come from the same place. Most all of us experience trauma. How do we make things right? And if you do something that disrupts the community, that hurts somebody in the community, how do you make that right again? So restorative justice is a great program for schools and for any organization.
Todd Bloomquist, I'm struck by a real now and then kind of view of things. I mean, this is a very different approach from, say, the 1950s, when even people who fought in the Second World War with all of its horrors put on a brave front and didn't talk about it. And I wonder how much you get criticism of the trauma-informed approach as too much hand-holding or something.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement, Jeff, and it comes up quite a bit that, oh, we're going to be trauma-informed, so that means kids don't have to meet a certain standard or they don't have to comply with the rules. In fact, just the opposite is the truth. We're working with a consultant out of Washington State University for our trauma-informed practices. His name is Dr. Christopher Blodgett, and one of the things he's been teaching us is that that's one of the most dehumanizing or inhumane things to do to somebody is to say you don't have to meet the same standards as everybody else. So it's just a different approach to get there. What we want is when a student's or actually a person in our building's facilities is having a difficulty with a situation is to help them regulate, get them into their thinking brain, and then fix whatever happened. Often we find children when they're back to their learning-ready brains, they'll articulate exactly what they did, and they'll want to fix it with whomever they may have hurt. Could have been words, could have been physical. And we find that once they go through that cycle, that they don't become what we call repeat offenders to that. And that's what the really proud to be partnering with the juvenile justice system and the work that they're doing to try to change the practice, which was, you know, you've got to now account for your crimes and throw some kind of sentence at them versus actually fixing it and helping them through their process.
In the school example you gave, though, how big a task can that be to get the child back to the what you just called the learning-ready brain?
You know, it can actually be pretty simple. The earlier we start, we find the more success we have with helping kids learn how to do their own self-regulation. It's a great gift to give somebody who's out of control the ability to get back under control. So earlier we start, the better, although it's all the way through our K-12 system, we're finding success with students learning how to self-regulate. So part of that is helping them understand what's happening in their body. So we help them with the brain science, and when they can feel their heart rate racing and they're panicked about whatever situation for whatever reason, and then to do something. So there's usually a physical activity that happens. It could be a quick walk, go get a drink of water. You might want to read something that's calming, some pattern that helps them come back under self-control. But it is difficult, and for a lot of students, this is very, very difficult work because it's not their natural tendency. They were in a different kind of environment. That's how their brains adapted, and so they're quick to fight, flight, or freeze. And what we're trying to do is get them to pause and then try a different approach to get back under control.
Our subject here on the Jefferson Exchange is adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs as they're often called, and how to be aware of those in trauma-informed care and trauma-informed practices. Dr. Todd Bloomquist is the Director of School Improvement for the Grants Pass School District. Peter Buckley is with Southern Oregon Success. You can join the conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 over the phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Todd, a bit of a gradual rollout, I notice, in the Grants Pass schools. I mean, how many schools are using it right now, and what kinds of results can you measure at this point?
Right. Well, you know, you wouldn't expect to see a lot of results right off the bat, because it is about every person understanding their adversity and their reactions to the world and then kind of retraining oneself with help from staff. Right now, we've got 6 schools out of our 10 sites that are engaged in a formal trauma-informed practice. It's a long process. It's a 3-year staff development process for each school. We started last year with a pilot school and at elementary level and saw pretty amazing results. In fact, they had a 31% fewer behavior referral rate than their other schools. And so that's a significant number. We think about the time lost in the classroom to behavior issues when it's 31% fewer than the other schools. That's a significant increase in teaching and learning time and student engagement time. That's pretty powerful. So the other 5 sites are, this is year 1 for them, so we'll be tracking their numbers throughout the year. But we'll see things, according to the data, increases in attendance rates, decreases in behavior referral issues that are going on. And eventually, 2 to 3 years out, you'll actually see an increase in academic performance by students.
All right. So we'll see how that tracks in the years ahead. Peter Buckley, there are some obvious benefits to working on adverse childhood experiences while people are still children. Does it get a bit trickier in implementing services for older people?
It does, but the key thing is change of perspective. I mean, it really is. It doesn't matter whether you're working with senior citizens or working with people middle age or whatever age group it is. If you're coming at it with a perspective that all of us, virtually all of us, have some sort of adverse childhood experience in our past, it has impact. All of us experience trauma at some point. Trauma is inevitable in life. And all of us experience trauma at some point. It just kind of changes the perspective of how you approach things. So we are working again with workforce development so people understand it. We have a specialist coming in next week. Dr. Ken Ginsberg is coming to do an event here in Medford. It's open to the public. It's at the Criterion Theater on October 17th, Tuesday, October 17th, from 8 a.m. till noon. And Dr. Ginsberg specializes. He's a pediatrician, but he specializes now in working with troubled adolescents, but he's done trainings for the U.S. military who have tried to take this side to say, okay, we're recruiting 18, 19, 20-year-old young men and women, and what exactly is going through their minds right now? What part of development are they in? How they might react to stress given what they've experienced? So this is again, science that crosses all parts of all of us. It's fascinating to move through. It is like a movement that's starting, Jeff. It's not just a kind of theory or a practice that's happening. It's a movement that's happening. Dr. Ginsberg is a tremendous specialist and able to show very practical, hands-on ways to take trauma-informed approaches. So, again, we welcome anyone. It's a no-cost event at the Criterion Theater next Tuesday, October 17th.
All right, so I know a fair number of people are going to say, hey, this is great. I've been wanting to tell somebody for a long time what's been bugging me. But there are also people, I would think, who would say, none of your business.
And that's a real key thing. You don't have to know what happened to somebody. It's not a question like, you know, you don't have to sit across the table from me and say, this is what happened when I was a kid. I just have to sit across the table for you and say, I'm assuming something happened to you, and you have adapted to what happened to you. So you are where you are right now. So given that, how do we move forward? And the science of resilience is very powerful. Todd mentioned how important it is for a caring and competent adult to be in a child's life, but also in terms of adult-to-adult interactions. Just, you know, the principles of safety, trustworthiness, choice, collaboration, empowerment. These are the five principles that trauma-informed care use, and those are applicable to any relationships, whether it be a work relationship, a family relationship, a community relationship. And the work that we're doing overall to kind of build communities, the state of Washington's 12 years ahead of us in this. They've been using this information for about 12 years, and the Self-Healing Communities Initiative in Washington has results in some counties have seen a decrease in teen suicide attempts by 98% over 12 years, increase in high school graduation rates by about 42%, drug use down, alcohol use down. And that's what we're trying to do here in Southern Oregon, to do a self-healing communities approach and to say, look, we can use this science across all sectors. We can use this science in every interaction, and we can start moving things forward for kids, for families, and for all of us.
You mentioned Washington being 12 years ahead. The actual ACEs, Adverse Childhood Experiences study, was in the 80s?
No, it was in the 1990s, 90s? But it's Dr. Blodgett, who Todd is working with, likes to say, and as he points out, we're usually about a generation behind scientific breakthroughs. As a species, it takes us about a generation to go, oh, we really should pay attention to that. And that's really what's happening now. This science is about, you know, 18, 19 years old. In the science of neurobiology, the last 20 years, the breakthroughs have been remarkable. So as a species now, we're going, wait a second, we should pay attention to this. And the more we pay attention to it, the more effective we can use these principles and make progress.
Peter Buckley and Dr. Todd Bloomquist, our guests, as we talk about trauma-informed care, trauma-informed practices, and adverse childhood experiences. Here's a call from Connie in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. Hi, Connie.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm going to be a bit of a devil's advocate here. I am in the baby boomer generation, and so growing up in the 50s and 60s, there were a lot of people who died of diseases, people's fathers, mothers. There were kids who were dying. There were people with trauma, as we now know, from sexual abuse and physical abuse that was going on all over the place and not talked about. But the classrooms were not out of control, and the seemingly violent antisocial behavior, well, it existed in small amounts, so it doesn't seem to be at the level of volume that we have now. So that we had a tremendous amount of trauma going on in the 50s and 60s, but it didn't seem to project into relationships. So I'd like to see a comparison of why there is so much acting out on both adult and juvenile levels as opposed to what was happening then.
All right, Connie, thanks. I appreciate it. Todd, you want to take that?
Sure, I can start, Connie, and I appreciate the question. And, you know, I don't have any probably good answers for you comparing back, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago. I do know the systems were quite different. You know, we were allowed to use corporal punishment, so fear drove a lot of classrooms, and so people wouldn't act out for the fear. In fact, I grew up in a classroom that had a paddle hanging on the wall and had several of my classmates paddled, and so that's not that far in our past where that was the way the classrooms were controlled. And I don't know why we're seeing more of the acting out now. I mean, there's some theories behind that. You do see some impact when a community or a culture goes through a pretty serious economic downturn like we just had in 2007, 2008. And you can see children that are born into stressed households will be a little more prone to have experienced adversity, and so they'll have adapted to that. So they'll be a little more quick to fight, flight, or freeze and not so willing to comply because of whatever triggers they have going on there. But I think it's a fair question. It'd be interesting to look at, trying to look at apples to apples, if we could do that, in the classroom from the 50s versus the classroom from the 2000s and above.
So, Todd, is there an assumption that everybody has some kind of trauma, some kind of adverse childhood experience?
Yeah, I think to be human actually is to have experienced some kind of stressors in the world, and so a lot of them are fairly adverse. And so one in four people are estimated to have experienced what we call complex trauma, and that's where, you know, the very serious kinds of bad things that happen to you, where you're living in a very terrible situation, and that has a significant impact on brain development. The other stressors that come along with adversities do change the way that you adapt to your home environment and then the rest of your community. But that's also a survival technique. And so you see where communities are consistently passing along these traits through the epigenetics to help them be prepared for their community environment. So they're either more quick to respond to certain kinds of things or more prone to be sensitive to certain kinds of things. And that's just part of that human adaptation. So I would say it's part of the human experience to experience stressors like that.
Okay, down to about our last 2 minutes, so we've got to move fairly fast here. Here's a call from Howard and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yes, I was wondering how their work on the trauma issue also might apply to, say, children who are born with learning disabilities like either autism or Asperger's syndrome, because that can be inherently traumatic in and of itself.
Oh, excellent question. How those things dovetail together. Thanks for that, Howard. Todd?
Yeah, they do dovetail together. Sometimes, and again, we don't always know. It's sort of a chicken and egg thing where the learning disability might come from. We are finding that a lot of learning disabilities, and I've worked in special education in schools for a lot of years, but probably a third to half of our students who are eligible for special education services are from those traumatic experiences that they experienced as children, so not necessarily inherited genetically. Certainly a student with autism, depending on where they are on the spectrum, can have a significant impact not only on that person's life, but also in the lives of the children around them.
Now, I know we're not just talking about service providers. You're talking to a business this morning, Todd, in just a few minutes. So what are some of the keys to training?
Keys to training is actually just understanding what it is, knowing that when people come in pretty ramped up that they might have other things going on in their lives and they may not actually be in their thinking brain right now, and ways to help them just to be calm, always being, you know, checking yourself, how am I responding to this person? I'm not ramping up to match their disposition. Those are key things. And this being positive and stable, competent caring are key factors.
Trauma-informed care and trauma-informed practices being unrolled in the Grants Pass School District. Todd Bloomquist is the Director of School Improvement. Peter Buckley is with Southern Oregon Success. And you said the public meeting is next Tuesday the 17th at the Criterion in Medford?
At 8 a.m. And more information, southernoregonsuccess.org.
Southern Oregon Success.org. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.